brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
SoftRep.com, on time, on target. All right, so I've been saying for a few shows, I think, that we had someone coming on the podcast that was in really heavy demand, and I didn't want to spill the beans or anything, because you never know if something will fall through. But what I could say is that when I was at SHOT Show, there were a lot of people who came up to me that were saying, you got to get Pat McNamara on the podcast. And even like T.O., our managing editor, was like, you got to get Pat McNamara on. And we're bringing it.
Yeah, everyone wanted to have Pat on, so we're happy that, you know, we convinced him to take, you know, 45 minutes out of his day to talk to us today. So
watching his stuff on YouTube prior, just like getting set for this interview, would you say he's possibly like the best firearms instructor out there for what he's doing? I mean,
you have to define best and what kind of firearms instruction, but I think for real world applications, I think Pat is definitely amongst the best out there. He's like one of those people who I recommend when people ask me, like, who should I take a course with? He is like one of a handful, small group of people that I would, you know, recommend, that I would send people to. So I think Pat's right up there.
I would assume that's, you know, a tough thing to do, though. He's probably in very high demand.
Yeah, I imagine he is.
Yeah, and we'll hear about that. So I'm very excited to have him on. We delivered for you guys. I'm going to throw out a correction. Two episodes ago, I mentioned that Wild Bill, who was portrayed in Band of Brothers, William J. Grenier, died. And Ron M. pointed out that, yes, I made the rookie mistake of not checking the date of the article. So I thought that it was March 8th of 2018. It was March 8th of 2014. I fucked up. Total rookie mistake. Rest in peace, of course, to Bill on the anniversary of that. But I always like to at least point it out if I screw something up.
Because, you're fake news, Ian.
Yeah, I was fake news on that episode. So my fault, guys. I will not do that in the future, and I'm usually not duped like that.
It happens. But, it happens. But, you know, we still got to talk about, you know, our World War II vets. So there's a silver lining in there.
That's true, for sure. Not much else to get into. I know that, you know, the Unabomber story happening in Texas right now, that's developing.
Well, Unabomber 2.0. It's not literally the Unabomber. Yeah. It's not Ted Kaczynski who's in prison. But something's going on for sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, want to speak to Ted Kaczynski, is like to get some ideas on what goes into the mind of someone like this and maybe figure out what's happening.
We're up to, what is it, like the third or fourth parcel bomb now? I mean, yeah, it's creepy, all this going on down in Texas. And I haven't been on top of this story as much as I'd like to be, because I've been, you know, committed in some other areas. But our writers are paying attention to it, and, you know, we'll follow those developments. I'm interested to see how it pans out myself.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll keep you updated on SoftRep. I'm sure that someone like Alex or Danielle will write something. They're always up on, like, the latest news. Kurt sometimes writes on what's happening and what's developing. All right, well, with that, we're going to get over to Pat McNamara. I'm psyched to have him on. It's a long time in the making. Check it out. So joining us for the first time on SoftRep Radio is Pat McNamara, and I do not bullshit you when I say you were probably the most requested guest. Like, when I was at SHOT Show, everyone was like, get Pat McNamara on the podcast, so I'm glad this is happening.
Oh, man, I'm honored. Appreciate it.
Hey, no, Pat, it's Jack. Just wanted to say thanks for coming on the show today.
Yep, hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Pat, as most of you guys who are listening know, is former Delta Force, served 22 years in the Army, is now a firearms instructor, probably one of the most known firearms instructors on YouTube, and the owner of T-Max Inc. The first thing I have to ask you that's totally unrelated, I saw on your Instagram that you were at Judas Priest on Long Island two nights ago. We're here in New York City, so I'm wondering why we didn't get you in studio. Are you you don't live in New York, though, right?
No, North Carolina. Nah. Plus, I was turning and burning. I had no time for anything. Pulled in there. I had to. We were out on Long Island. My wife and I boogied on Saturday morning to the memorial, 9/11 memorial. From there, we subwayed it up to Central Park, and then went back to Midtown and linked up with a friend of mine and some firemen who got us into one of the Irish pubs there, which is pretty much impossible to do on St. Patrick's Day, but got us in there. And then
it wasn't Emmett O'Looney's, was it, by any chance?
Connolly's.
Oh, okay. Because Emmett's like a big supporter of guys in special ops, so it would have been cool, right, if you saw him. I did see that you tagged Jose Mangan in the photo, who I used to work with when I was at SiriusXM. Great
Come
dude,
on,
though.
Man.
Yeah, I love Jose. Actually, funny story is, so when Mike Ritland visited SiriusXM, he's a huge metalhead. Jose got him on the air with him, and then Jose just gave him a ton of stuff. He was like, do you want this Pantera CD signed by Vinnie Paul? Take it. He was like, take this bottle of Jägermeister. And Mike Ritland looked like he was having like his Christmas right there. So just I figured I'd point that out. Jose's a great dude.
Yeah, I went out there and hosted Liquid Metal and Octane one day.
Nice.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
That's where I used to work.
I'm sorry?
That's where I used to work. I was at SiriusXM up until May when, you know, I got brought on full time to do this with these guys.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. That's wild. Wild. Small world.
Yeah, and Pat, I just want to say also congratulations on getting married. I remember when we crossed paths down in North Carolina, and you were engaged at that time. I remember meeting you and your wife in the bar. And just want to say congratulations.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, man, it's going so freaking well. I hit pay dirt on that. I mean, I definitely married up several levels, so I'm happy about it. And we are rocking, man. We are cooking with Amish butter.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I got lucky.
Yep.
So I don't know, where do we get started with this, Pat? You want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you're doing these days? And, you know, we know that, you know, most people know you as Pat McNamara, the firearms instructor. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the courses of fire that you offer down there? Talk a little bit about your business and what's available for people who are interested?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an MTT, mobile training teams. I travel globally to do this. I'm trying to limit my travel, though, because I'm getting a little travel weary, because I am in pretty much a different state every week, almost every week. And I either do my typical course is a TAPS course, tactical application, practical shooting, combination, carbine, pistol. But I do a lot of 2-day pistol courses or 2-day rifle courses. And then I do instructor classes, and I do a Sentinel class, which is a lot of fun to run. I think I only have two of those this year, the Sentinel class. And then besides for the training, I'm co-owner of a MMA gym, and I run combat strength training.
Wow.
So I'm training people globally on the combat strength training. I have the ebook, and right now there's open enrollment on the combat strength training course online. I write for Athlon Outdoors for Ballistic Magazine and Combat Handguns. I'm writing an article right now for NRA Magazine for the Carry Guard, the new Carry Guard magazine, NRA. Let me see. I just put out a Sentinel DVD. There's a package, the Sentinel DVD, the TAPS carbine and TAPS pistol DVD. They can be bought individually or as a package. I got so much crap going on. And then, you know, I've got like, I collaborate with Rogue American Apparel, and got my own brand of coffee T-Max Inc. Blaze Ops Blend Double Dark, which is fantastic coffee. It's really good. The off the Invader coffee line.
Nice.
And then my new thing is only because I've been bugged about it. I do artwork, pen and ink, stipple, pointillism, and I've been against it, but a buddy of mine at Defense Targets, Danny Doman, talked me into selling the some of the Bird of Prey prints that I have. So I'm going to put those up on my store probably in the next 2 weeks.
Well, Pat, let me ask you this, not to get too like zen on you right off the bat, but you know, you have some interesting hobbies. I mean, you're a talented guy, not just a marksman. I wonder if you could talk a little bit, if you think this is true, if you know, you're artistically, and you know, you've talked to other things about like your interest in bird watching, how these things kind of feed into marksmanship, if they do at all. I mean, do you feel that one hand washes the other, or that it's important to have a variety of different interests in life?
I don't think that those type of hobbies have anything to do with marksmanship. However, there's a parallel when it comes to training methodology. For instance, like in my combat strength training or in some of the activities that I participate in, and that is, you know, do the best you can with what you have. Think about performance versus outcome on stuff. It's funny because right before I called you guys, I was looking up the rules for speed golf. Because well, I try to play golf once a week. I don't have the time to get out once a week, but I try to, and it only takes me 2 hours to drive from my home, play 18 back to my home, only because I'm first out and I'm hitting straight. So I got nobody in front of me. I'm not playing with anybody, but I thought, man, you know, what'd be cool is freaking speed golf. Because now I'm boogieing, not in a cart boogieing, and it's a whole different scoring system involved too. But I'm not sure I've got the legs for it, so I might just try a couple nines first instead of a full 18. I'm not even sure I answered your question. I think I talked about the parallel.
That's okay.
With some of them, but the as far as like the other hobbies go, there's like bird watching and stuff. There's really no parallel, but with the birds. My vision, distance vision, is very, very good, and I attribute that to focusing through the woods and through obstacles and stuff like that when watching the birds. My vision right here sucks. Like looking at you guys on this screen right here, you're a complete blur unless I put these guys on. But my vision out there is really good. So, and it's better than most people's vision that way. You know, at a distance. Like for instance, I could see. Holes in paper on an IPSC target at 50 yards, 9mm.
Do you find that it puts you, like, say, art or bird watching puts you in a similar, meditative state? Is like when you're shooting, you know, you find like when you're a long range marksman, the incredible amount of focus you have to put into each shot. Like, I recently got into modeling. After a long dry spell, not the kind of modeling where you're like showing off your bod that no one wants to see that. But like painting. And I find that it's the only time that it puts me in this sort of like meditative state, that's similar as when I used to shoot a lot.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The thing is you get, you're wrapped up in the moment when you're doing those kind of things and you're not thinking about anything on the periphery. Right. You know, you're in the here and now versus thinking about your emails that you have to service or what's on the schedule for tomorrow, that kind of thing. When you're doing those things like the artwork or the birds or the golf or fishing, you want to be in the here and now. You want to disconnect from all the other bullshit that's in your life and get into that meditative state. I think it's good therapy, especially for guys who are really busy. You know, I mean, I'm hobby heavy, but man, I don't have the time to work on most of them even during the week. But if I have that hour or 2 hours, I'm going to jump in and do something. I'm definitely not going to sit on my ass and watch freaking Netflix, you know, or something like that. I'm going to get in my garden or run the dogs or play the golf or whatever it is, play some music, get on the drums, get on the guitar, whatever it is.
One of the other things I wanted to bring up with you is I have a few people in common, people we've met and crossed paths with. One of them was George Hand. And, You know, I always, well, I don't always do this, but sometimes I do this, which is a little embarrassing. It, like when we had Mark Boyatt in, I asked some of his former teammates, you know, some what are some questions I should ask Mark? And so he told us the story about how he accidentally set his Halo chute on fire with a smoke grenade. But I asked George, I was like, what should we ask Pat? He mentioned some story about, what was it? Somebody going right through your suspension lines on a Halo jump.
Yeah, dude. See, George and I go way back. I'm talking 84, 85. And plus we went to selection together. We went to combat dive school together. I mean, so a good and bad thing about a guy like that is he's seen you at your best, but he's also seen you at your worst.
Well, so I don't mean to ask like anything embarrassing. You don't have to answer, of course.
Yeah. No. This was, I was this close to retiring and wanted to get one more jump in just to stay current. And in order to do that, it was like an ash and trash jump, you know, where you had to strap hang with a bunch of freaking people you don't know. Which I freaking hate because I loved free fall and doing MFF with guys I know because,
people you trust.
It's dangerous. You could die doing that shit. So I got on this pay hurt jump and, there was this gal who was on Halo status and she sat on the plane next to me and this is all the way up by the cockpit and I'm going, oh my God. Cause I knew she was a soup sandwich. I knew she was a football bat, that she was a shit eating turnip, that she was a chicken wire canoe, that she was hockey cleaved. And, so I broke protocol and I achieved separation in the aircraft. And I walked all the way down to the tailgate and a buddy of mine was JM. And I said, hey, Sam, if you want, I could poise out and you guys could dock on me because my free fall skills were really good. Cause I had like 600 jumps at the time. And he goes, okay, good. And we're short final. So I'm standing on the ramp, looking down, he's doing his last commands. And I turn around to look in the aircraft and this freaking chick achieves separate. She closes the gap in the aircraft. She walked all the way up and I'm face to face with her. So I look at Sam and I said, Sam, scratch the poise. I'm going to dive out. He goes, all right. He's so freaking confused at that point. So I dive out and I am tracking, man. I am freaking, whoa, I am getting away from that aircraft because this is probably my last jump.
Right.
So I am boogieing, man. I'm full Delta. I am boogieing, put on the brakes, boosh. And I turn around and here comes this freaking chick right at me because she's flying like this. One hand or her basically facing the altimeter and hand on ripcord.
Oh.
So she's in a full track and she doesn't even know it.
And she's not paying attention.
Completely oblivious to her surroundings. So I I dock with her, boom, and I give her one of these. And I said, pay attention, you know, basically pay attention. And she gives me a nod and I boosh, I achieve separation again. I'm booking, man, and I'm looking, altimeter checking, wave off, nothing. I deploy my chute and like seconds after I deploy, because I'm up trying to break the, get the brakes out and I felt something, you know, I felt my chute wobble or whatever, but I couldn't see anything because my arms were up like this. So I go into my canopy check,
your 4 points of performance.
Controllability checks. And I'm looking up and I got closed end cells on one side. And I'm like, huh, I've never had closed end cells before. That's weird. So I'm thinking, well, do I cut away? You know, you've only got this much time to think about it. So I'm looking at the altimeter. I'm going, I'm at 2,500. I'll wait another 500 feet. And it's still controllable. And now I'm at 2,000. I go, I'll wait till 1,500 feet. It's still, I can still cut away if it's a piece of shit. And, but it was controllable. And I end up landing right on, right in the pit area. And one of the guys from one of the riggers, he caught my chute before it hit the ground because they saw me coming in with end cells. And he's inspecting it, and he goes, holy shit, and there was a freaking gigantic hole in this thing. And I'm thinking, what in the hell? And here comes this freaking chick with her Gentex helmet on, big red face, and a huge chunk of my canopy sticking out of her helmet.
Oh, my God.
He goes, oh, man, that sucked. And I go, you flew through my fucking canopy. I was so freaking pissed. I wanted to punch her right in the head. Oh, my God. It was horrible. Yeah, but.
And that the evidence was still clinging to her face when she came down.
It was stuck in her Gentex helmet.
There's no denying that. There's no denying that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, George, for that one.
The other funny thing, I can't remember what I asked George, but something about hand to hand combat, and he just made this offhand comment. He's like, yeah, for PT in the morning, I used to have to box Pat McNamara and Josh Collins. Lucky me. Is that this funny comment?
I can just imagine. George is cutting himself short because that guy's a really good man. His kickboxing skills were ridiculous. So I was bottom rung compared to those two guys. I was bigger and stronger, but those guys can hit and box well. But yeah, I mean, getting hit by Josh Collins, who was pro, you know, he had pro fight. That guy, I mean, when he hits you in the bread basket, he comes around, boosh, with the massive freaking hooks. You are going down on delayed effect. I mean, So I definitely know what it feels like by getting punched in the face by both of those guys, and it ain't fun.
Maybe George is downplaying it because he made it sound like he was the one who had a handful with both of you.
Nah. He's way better. Yeah. His boxing skills were ridiculous back then. Yep. Yeah, he's being humble.
Yeah, he is. Ian, did you want to? I know, Pat, we know you're a massive metalhead. I know Ian has some questions for you.
Oh, yeah, sure. So, T.O., our managing editor, was showing me like all the podcast stuff that you've done with metal and was like, you got to ask Pat some metal questions. So, I guess I'll just shoot a few over. I mean, the first of which would probably be, how was Judas Priest at the Coliseum, especially being that it's half the band now because. You know, you've got members not there anymore. One member who's in, you know, has some medical issues happening, right?
Yeah. Glenn Tipton has Parkinson's, so he's picking and choosing which shows he'll go to. Now, KK, when KK left, he was replaced by Richie Faulkner. Dude, that guy, what in the hell? Holy freaking jamoly. Young blood and could freaking slam a jamma in Alabama, rock and roll it in Pensacola. Whoa, that guy was on it like a bonnet, man. He was ridiculous.
Nice.
I went into it. I got to tell you the truth, man. I went into it not expecting much because Rob's 65 or something, Halford, you know, 63. So I was thinking, you know, he can't still have a 3-octave range, you know? Dude, man, they did not disappoint. Best show I've been to in, I can't remember when. I saw Iron Maiden last summer, and Priest was way better. That's awesome. They had a replacement guitarist, too, for Glenn, and he was super freaking good. So, you know, Ian and Dave and Rob Halford, they were still there. Man, they did not disappoint. Plus, they played a bunch of the old stuff. The Ripper, Sinner, Saints in Hell. Are you kidding me? They played Saints in Hell, man. I mean, talk about a complex song to sing. And Rob was, dude, oh, my God. His freaking pipes are unbelievable. And the other thing is, he's just the coolest freaking he's the metal god, you know? Yeah. He's the coolest guy on stage. You know, for instance, when he'd have the audience participation hold the mic out, he would, you know, give him a thumbs up instead of saying, oh, it's not loud enough, you know? He was very appreciative of his fans. They even did Painkiller, man. I mean, that's a freaking hard one to sing. That's all, way up there. That's Bloody Murder way up there. Dude, they did not disappoint. You know who warmed up for him was Saxon? And I said to my wife, why am I not a Saxon fan?
Yeah, I know that Bill from our site is a big Saxon fan. I was surprised to see that Judas Priest apparently had their highest charting debut. Highest charting first week of sales with this new album. and it's not even, you know, the traditional lineup. So that's cool to see that they're still doing it. And it's going to be crazy when all these bands retire, because you have right now Ozzy apparently doing his last tour, which I know he said before he's doing. You know, who else? I mean, Iron Maiden, how many more years do you have left? Slayer's doing their last tour. Motley Crue, I mean, that's, you know, the glam side of things, but they, you know, did their last tour not too long ago. And it's just like, you know, once these bands are done who headline all of the big rock festivals, like, what's next? There's not really, there's nothing that's ever going to replace that, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a bunch of newer bands who are quality. And right now, with it in the metal genre, it's all about who can play the best, you know, like guitarists are competing against guitarists and drummers against drummers. Like metal drummers don't do rolls. You know, it's how complex can I make this? But it's still palatable. It still makes sense, you know, without just hammering double basses the whole time. For instance, Chris Adler, Lamb of God.
Yeah.
What the hell? Which, by the way, I'm seeing them in June with Slayer. I can't forget.
And Anthrax, right? Anthrax is on that.
Yeah, I'm not a big Anthrax fan, but Testament's on it, and I love them. I know it's almost like it's blasphemy to say you don't like Anthrax, dude. I can't think of a single song I freaking like by him, man. It's all power chords and they're this, you know, the singer. I mean, he really can't sing. And if you're a frontman and that's all you do, you got to be, you know, Dio. You got to be David Lee Roth. You got to be Rob Halford. You know, if that's all you do, if you're just a frontman, you got to be Phil Anselmo, you know, that kind of thing. You've got to be a frontman. You've got to be able to carry a tune and energize the crowd. Sorry, people out there who love Anthrax, but I don't know.
Anthrax, but you're certainly entitled to your opinion on that. So people are probably wondering, like, favorite metal albums of all time. Pat McNamara's like top five.
I talked to CJ, the Metal Motivator, about this. You got to look at good from beginning to end, you know, no fluff, just freaking unbelievable. Metallica has one of them, right? So Kill 'Em All or Master of Puppets, from beginning to end, badass. Rust in Peace, right? Megadeth,
amazing.
Beginning to end, I mean, spectacular.
I think Go Euthanasia by Megadeth
is talking about Motley Crue, Shout of the Devil,
yeah.
From beginning to end, I mean, ridiculous.
I think Megadeth Euthanasia is a very underrated one. Listening back to Euthanasia is a great one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they kind of try to appeal to the masses with that one a little bit. But sure. I love that album.
Yeah. Not to interrupt
that's
you.
That's a hard one to answer as far as like favorite. But I named a few of them.
Sure.
I'm not going to name, you know, an album that Far Beyond Driven. Pantera, beginning to end, you know, just badass, freaking badass, no fucking around, and unbelievable riffs, unbelievable vocals, and songwriting, all of it.
Awesome. All right. Well, that covers the metal world, I think, for Pat, because I can't turn off the listeners too much who are like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Because I wanted to get into the shooting side of things as well, and one thing I was wondering, you know, you were at SHOT Show, this past SHOT Show, people ran into you, I know, from the website, and, you know, it's become a pretty saturated industry. Like, what do you think sets someone apart doing what you're doing as a tactical firearms instructor?
Man, I've been asked that a bunch, and I think I can only go by what people tell me, like, in a class, you know, for guys who have had a bunch of classes. And, you know, I get a lot of, dude, best class I ever been to, that kind of thing, which is nice. I appreciate it. But when guys are specific, like, your style of teaching is unlike anything I've ever seen before, or I've never been to a course where the instructor came up to me as I pulled in and introduced himself and asked how I was, the performance-based training methodology resonated with me because I could use it full training spectrum. Stuff like that. I love hearing comments like that, teaching style of the comments, because I think that's what sets people apart, you know, delivery and style. Because when it comes to one instructor versus another, if he's a special ops guy, there's not going to be a huge variation between what he's teaching. It's going to be how he's teaching it, how he's presenting it, how he's making or managing time. That's another big one, man. I've been doing this a long time, so I figured out how to manage time and to help extend the learning curve, because I don't want people working past the point of diminishing return, and make it enjoyable and fun while mitigating grab ass, because I can't freaking tolerate grab ass on the range. I want to have a lot of fun, but no grab ass.
Yeah, well, I mean, you also, as you mentioned, have a ton of experience teaching people how to shoot both in and out of the military. So, I mean, that's a lot of iterations to learn from and kind of murder board your own work. So, I mean, that's got to play into it.
Absolutely, because I think what you learn, too, is there's a skill set disparity within a group. So you have to adjust the training to meet the individual's need. You have to also leave nobody behind, but nobody unchallenged at the same time when you have a skill set disparity. And by virtue of doing it a long time, you learn those things. And another thing you learn is not only what to say, but what not to say, when to keep your fucking mouth shut, you know, because that's massive, man. Because when it comes to teaching like pistol, for instance, there's a lot of brain default mechanisms that go into that. And you gotta let the individual, you gotta tell the individual to let himself put the analytical mind aside and allow the body and the machinery to work, because it's probably correct, you know, the analytical side, the primitive thinking side. So it's real important to know what not to say. I think when teaching pistol, for example, too many are too eager to say too much. So the message becomes a bunch of watered down esoteric minutia, and it's no longer palatable to the intended recipient.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that, because it reminds me of, you know, conversations and even experiences I've had with Jim West and his approach to hand-to-hand combat training, that it's very much geared to the individual and the personality. And he makes that assessment of where you're at and takes you from there. And I get that sense about you as well, that you're doing the same on the marksmanship end of things.
Yeah, because, you know, if a guy – like I've had guys who have come to six or seven of my, you know, courses, the same guys. And there's one guy, for instance, who still shoots in like a modified Weaver every time he comes. And I don't even correct him, because he shoots well. So I'm like, screw it, man. I mean, he's 60 years old, you know, do your thing, bro. You're freaking rocking. So now all I could make you do is, help better your personal style. And I'll do that. I mean, I don't want him to shoot that modified Weaver. It drives me crazy and it looks dumber than hell. But whatever. It's working for you.
Yeah. Why goof it up? It reminds me of the medic on my ODA. He was a pretty salty guy, and I was a relatively young, you know, 18 Bravo. And the way he shot was just not out of the textbook at all, but he was accurate. Yeah. He was accurate all the time. So it's like, am I going to get in there and mess with what you're doing just because it doesn't look right? It's not out of the manual when you're putting rounds on target. Yeah, probably not worth it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, styles are very personal. And I will adjust them if it's not working, full training spectrum.
Right.
If you can't move with it, if you can't set up with it, that kind of thing, then I'm going to start saying, hey, start thinking about this. Get rid of that turtle back and just stand up, bro. Just stand up. You don't need a big turtle back and super aggressive. Just stand up. Trust me. It's going to be better. It's going to be faster. It's going to be more effective. Just try it. And he goes, dude, you were right. I said, yeah, man, I didn't go home last night and smoke a bunch of crack and dream this shit up.
Well, yeah, the fundamentals of marksmanship remain the same. And I guess that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about, too, is when it comes to marksmanship, it seems like there's a real obsession in that world with the cool new thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, what?
Yeah, I call them, there's a lot of solutions to problems that don't exist. So those cool new things, gimmicks, gizmos, and gadgets. I mean, I see a lot of them. Not too many of them, because guys coming to my course are pretty serious. You know, if you're spending money to train on a weekend, you're usually pretty serious about it.
It's a commitment.
So Yeah, I don't see a lot of goofiness. Not a lot of it. Periodically, every once in a while, I do. I see it more with guys that I drink beer with, who don't shoot but own stuff and guns and crap, and they're showing me pictures of these gadgets they got. And I go, oh yeah, pretty cool, bro. I guess, I don't know. Good for you. I don't know what to say about it, but to me, it looks dumber than hell. But I'm not going to say that to you. Yeah, I just don't see the purpose in it. But yeah, there's a lot of that out there.
Well, I mean, even if we set aside the gimmicks and gizmos, and I don't want to talk about the cool new thing, but I wanted to ask you if you think there are future trends in this industry, in this training field. I mean, do you see any future trends happening or anything that catches your interest? Or do you think the fundamentals of marksmanship are just the same?
No, I see future trends. It's guys who are copying me. No, I shit you not, man. Like when I started talking about that, my thing was performance-based training, right? And then doing physical stuff on the range, a lot of movement, picking stuff up. I mean, nobody was doing that. But now all my industry competitors, they're even talking about performance-based training. They don't know what it is, but they're selling it as performance-based training. And so the future trends, a lot of them, if they're cool, they're going to come from me. I'm sorry. Yes, that's hubris, but I'm saying it because I guess because I'm old and crotchety and I'm allowed to be crotchety. There's also there's also trends with different the fighting styles always evolved. Like, for instance, knife fighting and that kind of thing. You know, it's a big thing. Guys who are in the shooting world will also go to like knife fighting classes. I think that's a little trendy. I'm not sure how that fits in the scheme of maneuver of things. Only because I guess I'm not a massive fan of it, that knife fighting. And if you want me to go into why, I'll tell you why. I see. The other thing is, the mixing the physical stuff with the shooting, that's becoming more and more of a cool thing. I remember opening up an article, it was 2 years ago, in Recoil magazine, and they had a course fight. It was my grid of fire with the sandbag, just like on my YouTube.
I've seen it.
It was in Louisiana or Alabama or something, or somewhere where a guy had a shooting school and a range and all this stuff. And the editor or the main dude from Recoil went down and said, "Oh, these guys are so badass. They're mixing physical stuff with shooting." But anyway, that's typical of the stuff I'm seeing out there. And this guy totally took credit for it, which I pinged him on Facebook and he apologized and said, "Oh, dude, I always give you credit." I said, "But I didn't see credit in the Recoil magazine." Just saying. I mean,
interesting, man. I would like to hear a little bit more expanded on why you're not a fan of knife fighting, because as Jack could say, the guys from the generational, older Jim West, would be a huge proponent for the knife fighting stuff.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I carry wherever I go, right? Everywhere I go, I'm going to carry. I'm going to pack. I got extra mag on me. I have a folder, not a fighting blade, because you know what you can do with a folding knife? It's a knife. You can use it. Where, if somebody says, "Hey, man, you got a knife?" It's, "Yeah, but it's my fighting blade. You can't use my fighting blade because it's fighting blade." So there's a difference there. Here's the thing, though, too. All right. I know that a confrontation, 99% of the time, any confrontation is going to go physical before lethal, right? It's going to be physical before lethal. Any confrontation. If it's physical and it escalates, I know that, man, I can knock a dude out real freaking fast.
I believe it.
He won't see it coming. It'll be from a non-aggressive posture. It'll be spontaneous, and he won't see it coming. I can knock him out real fast, and I can pull him over to the curb and let him rest. Or if it goes lethal, I know I can dispatch him really fast and effectively. Cutting a guy up, first off, you're not going to kill him, right? You're not going to kill him. He's got to bleed for a while, And, when you splay a dude open, I don't know how many people who actually do knife fighting have seen guys cut open, But man, is it a mess. So you're number one, you're covered with this stuff. It's not just going to stick to him. You are covered in this mess. There's going to be pictures everywhere, cell phones and all that crap. Now you have, because the guy's not dead, now you got to defend that in a court of law with this guy's guts all over the street. You are going to be freaking hammered, man. That jury's going to see that and go, well, he deserves to get his ass kicked, but cut open? No freaking way. That is brutal. That is unethical. That is immoral. That is beyond human, man. So, I mean, I'm going to knock him out or kill him. Yes, I got a knife and I am prepared to use it, but let me back up. Jim West could fight, man. Smokey could fight. But a lot of guys who do knife fighting can't fight.
Yeah.
I think you have to be a fighter first to know how to freaking yield that blade and be effective with it. You still have to be able to compartmentalize all those pressures, you know, that pressure of a fight. And to be effective with that, man, I see guys who go to knife fighting classes just flailing with it, just flailing, you know, if they get in a fight. And messy, whew, and it's not going to be lethal. You know, to be lethal with that blade, that takes, you know, well, I don't know, decades to be instantly lethal with it. So there you go. There's my 2 cents on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why when people ask me who they should go and take shooting course from, I tell them, go see Pat McNamara. Just do what he tells you to do. You'll be fine. There was one other thing I wanted to ask you, if you'd be willing to talk about it, because you had posted up this picture that is like literally mind blowing. And I'm talking about the one of you at the Berlin Wall.
Oh, yeah.
In like full, like you know, that guy, that singer Gunther.
Yeah, I remember that.
You're dressed up like him. It's just incredible. I just wanted to know if you could give us a little bit of the backstory on that picture.
Yeah. So I had the luckiest career ever. I mean, I mean, SF Baby, first group. Then I got recruited to work in a job in Berlin, and it was like setting up networks, Cold War stuff. It was real, you know, cloak and dagger crap.
Because you're a German linguist, right?
That was a prerequisite for that one. Then I had another job. I'll get back to that. But I had another job spying on the Soviet Army in former Soviet East Germany. And once the wall came down, reunification, I went to selection at the unit and stayed there for my last 13 years. But yeah, that picture, you know, goofy freaking German get up. Black shoes and stupid pants and tracksuits and leather jackets and mullets and ambiguously gay mustaches and all that crap. But the job was real, real friggin' cool. I mean, it was neat, man. I mean, I could talk days about that and the other one where I worked in former Soviet East Germany. But yeah, real cool stuff. Yep. I was very fortunate to have been a part of that chunk of history.
Yeah. And you were there when the wall came down.
Yeah. Wall in 89 and then reunification in 91.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for both. Yes.
That's incredible.
I am surprised Pat looks as young as he does, you know, no homo, but you look very good, sir.
Right on. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. I got to take care of myself, man. I got to eat right and exercise because I like to goof around. You know, I like to drink beer and I like to smoke cigars. So I got to eat. My diet's ridiculous and my workout program is ridiculous. So okay. I have a young wife, you know, I want to take care of her for a long time and be as young as possible for her too. And for those who are, you know, for those who follow me, man, I am extremely honored and blessed that I have this following. And it's like, it's a complete demographic of people, you know, it's people in their 70s and people in their, it's people 8 or 9 years old, you know, who are fans of my YouTube channel, for instance. So, I have an obligation to, stay stronger, longer and as fit and relevant as possible for as long as possible.
That's awesome. Well, so the website, for those wondering, it's tmaxinc.com. You can follow Pat on Instagram at tmaxinc. Anything else that you're promoting before we wrap this up? I mean, this has been awesome.
Well, another one for those guys who have the income for it. I collaborated with Carolina Arms Group and made a signature 1911, the Blaze Ops Edition 1911. Oh, man, I have never been instantly enamored with a gun before in my life. I'm a 1911 fan. I mean, I love my Glocks too, and all my other handguns and rifles. But I have a love affair with a 1911, a good custom built one. So that's another one. Carolina Arms Group Blaze Ops Edition 1911. Only 25 being made. I think there's a few left, maybe a half dozen left. What else am I promoting? I said the Panio Productions, the DVDs. I've got two books in hard copy, Sentinel and Taps, and then I've got the ebook Combat Strength Training, and then YouTube channel's Pat Mac channel, like you said, Instagram T Max Inc, and I think that's about it.
Yeah, I saw the books on the website, but I think you were saying the same thing, Jack. I was surprised you don't have like a memoir out though, right?
No, only because I don't want to be a douchebag and write about stuff that I shouldn't write about. You know, I've kept my nose clean for a long time. In this industry, it's not, I realize it's not easy to do. That's what I'm realizing. It's not the True. Easiest thing to do. Keep your nose clean. So, I was working on one, but more satire than anything else. So if I have the time, I'll finish it. And it's called Beer, Bullets, and Birds.
I like it.
When I read through it, I'm like, oh, man, this is good stuff. Because it's memoirs to a certain point, but I'm not going to talk about, like, operations and schools and stuff like that. Unless there's an anecdote that is a freaking riot, you know, and that it relates to either beer, bullets, or birds. Because some of those intermix, man, I mean, with – for instance, bullets and birds, there's a bunch. They're a riot. They're a riot. So I was fortunate enough to have a lot of bad luck in the military. And when you look back at it, it's funnier than hell.
That's cool, man. Because I feel like a lot of people would read a Pat memoir for sure.
Oh, for sure. Well, Pat, even if, you know, it's not for everybody, but that's something, if you did write it, you'd even put it into a safety deposit box. And that's for your kids or grandkids or whatever down the line.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's pretty neat. Like I said, I was extremely fortunate, man. And I had like the coolest military career. I mean, I had two SF MOSs and Halo and combat dives at 22 years old. So even starting out, you know, I started out fast tracking, but a lot of it was luck and having the right mentors.
Yeah. Getting in with the right group of guys.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So the last thing I was wondering, too, is you said that you got to host on Liquid Metal. How did that come about?
Jose Mangan and I met on social media. You meet the coolest people on social
this
media.
This is true.
I think. I've met some really freaking awesome people on social media. So I pinged him. I think it was maybe 4 years ago. I on an Instagram post where I dressed up as King Diamond for Halloween.
Nice.
And I thought, you know what, Jose Mangan would like this. So I tagged him just for shits and grins. And sure as shit, he pinged me back. And then we started chatting, and he said, hey, can I send you an email? And I sent him – oh, I sent him the have you seen the Bravo Company, the BCM interview?
That, no, I haven't.
It's 8-minute long interview. It's pretty cool. But the beginning of it has me running and gunning on the range, and there's some metal just shredding in the back.
I'm sure T.O. at the site has seen this.
I said, I don't want any gay freaking tunes playing here. I want some freaking screaming guitars and freaking banging drums. So I sent that to Jose, and he was like, holy cow, this is the coolest thing ever. So he sent me an
email.
And
that's how he sounds. I said, and that's how he sounds, Jose, for those who don't know.
Yeah, oh, dude, yeah, he's funny.
Everything with Jose is, you could talk about, there have been times where I was like in the back, you know, we were in the kitchen at SiriusXM, and he'd be like, we have new soaps in here, it's so fucking metal. Everything was metal to Jose.
Yeah, dude, he is the metal, the most metal person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And he has met every single person in the industry. Yeah. If there's somebody in metal, he has met them. But anyway, he sent me the email and said, hey, can he talked about his connection with Affliction Clothing.
Sure.
Asked if I'd be a brand ambassador, and I was like, I'm not sure, man. I know the people who wear Affliction gear. It's like, but then he said, oh, no, there's a new gun line and all this stuff. And I said, well, send me, yeah, I'll check it out. And then he asked if I was going to be in California anytime. And I said, yeah, I got a course coming out, you know, in the LA area. So I did a twofer and took him to the range one day, and we did a big Affliction Keep the Drive Alive video shoot on the range with me teaching Jose, because he's a gun guy, because he's got a freaking he bought a Glock 19. So I said, bro, you got to know how to use that thing. Just because you have a gun doesn't mean you're armed. So I gave him a couple hour class, and boom, he picked it up like that. Then he said, hey, you want to come to the studio? I was like, are you freaking kidding me? And then he asked if I wanted a host. So it was pretty easy. But yeah, so that's how it came about.
That's so cool. Yeah, because I was going to say, I got to tell Sean at Liquid Metal about you, because I'm sure he'd like to do something as well. You probably know Sean the Butcher.
Sean the Butcher?
Yeah.
Sean
great
the
Butcher.
Dude, man, all those guys, all you guys are freaking awesome, man. And it, you know, when you're a fan of the genre of music, you also become a fan of that guy who's putting it on.
Yep.
And you always wonder, like, Rebecca and I will like Google him. What does this guy look like? You know, that kind of thing. Because you've got a picture in your head of what he looks like. But Sean, man, he's really freaking good at what he does. And I love his, you know, working with Jose on the
Getting to the Pit. Is that what it's called, right? Or the Trivia Pit?
Yeah, the Trivia Pit.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really good together on that.
Yeah, I agree. I've known Sean for a long time, but yeah, he does a great job on there. So I'll have to mention that he was mentioned on this episode. But I do remember hearing that Jose was becoming a gun guy, because Will Cow, who I worked with, was like, Jose is a fucking gun guy now, and was asking him about that. There's actually a very funny Will Cow story about Jose. That they were meeting with some like big investors of SiriusXM and just talking about what they do. And I think Andrew was like, yeah, I do a conservative talk radio show. We appeal to ages like 35 to 55, mainly male demographic. And Jose, in front of these big investors, he's like, and we play fucking metal, man. Like, but that's Jose all the time.
Yeah, no, he is. He is the most metal guy I've ever met. Yeah.
I've also heard Jose call himself like a metro metalhead, because he's a metalhead who also like waxes his eyebrows and shit. It's a little weird.
Man, yeah. He's so pretty. Oh my God. Yeah. His hair and his jewelry. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Pat, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. You know, we'll let you get back to your business. Thanks so much.
And when you're back in New York, let's do it in studio.
Oh, right on. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, thanks guys for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and you guys are great hosts. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Pat. Anytime you need anything from us, don't hesitate to reach out.
Rock and roll, baby.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right. Have a good one.
Great having Pat McNamara on. Man, what knowledge from that guy, and some great stories that probably wouldn't have been brought up if not for you talking to George and talking to Jim, so...
Oh, well, I mean, that was just a little, I didn't want to put Pat on the spot. It's just a little way to kind of, you know, break the ice.
Yeah, he didn't seem to mind.
No.
And he told those stories in pretty great detail, which was great. I guess before we wrap up, the things I should mention, you know, I'm probably going to get some new copy for all the stuff that we're working on. We actually have a big company meeting coming up. But the newest venture from Hurricane Group really is Coonadog. So check out Coonadog online, which is C-U-N-A dog. It's on Instagram. And what we're basically doing is similar to what we're doing with Crate Club, but it's a box for dog owners and specifically appeals to the type of guy that listens to this show, that just wants to get great food and great toys and all that for your dog that they're going to love. And it's picked by guys who know this stuff. So I'm excited to see what's to come of that. So check it out, Coonadog. Anything else from you, Jack?
No, I think that's about it.
Cool. Well, next show, I'm actually going to be in Florida, so we're playing one of the old members-only shows with the Odyssean. who we mentioned. And I know the Odyssean will be happy that some metal was brought into this podcast. Because when you were even saying in our little writers group, you know, what questions do you want me to ask Pat and T.O.? It's just like anything metal related. And I think I got some good stuff out of him. And it really is true what I said, by the way, I think, of these headlining festivals in the future. Because when you think of big rock headlining festivals, it's always these bands like Metallica, Megadeth, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Ozzy Osbourne. There's no more Black Sabbath. And these bands are getting pretty old.
Yeah.
Every band I've mentioned has been doing it for over 30 years. So it's just like, who is the next generation of bands to headline this type of thing? I know you said Lamb of God. There's a few, but there's not a whole lot. I don't feel like there are the rock stars or the metal stars, if you want to call them that, of today that there were in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You guys know way better than I do. I mean, what do you think? Is the genre as big as it was 20, 30 not. Years
I
ago?
Well, you also know, just walking around, I feel like everything is now hip-hop, if you even want to call hip-hop. It hip-hop. It's this auto-tune, pop. You know, mumble rap.
It's very, like, poppy in nature.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Teeny bopper music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of all different genres of music, but I also feel like music does not mean to this generation what it meant to even people our age growing up. Because I still remember, you know, like having my dad drive me to the store to get the CD and then like putting it on my Discman, being in my bedroom and listening to it from song one to the very end. Now music is just something that you like casually have on in the background as you're doing
you
other
have tracks.
Things.
Yeah, tracks. Like we had to, like when we were younger and we were in that transition period. But I mean, yeah, you had a limited amount of money. So there's only so much music you were going to be able to buy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by the time, you know, I was like, what, 16, 17, we finally got CDR drives. And so now we're pirating music.
Yep.
So now it's like it was like an explosion. All of a sudden you have a stack of like 30 CDs, like, holy shit. And I listened to a lot of industrial music, electronica.
You've said Fear Factory before, right? Which kind of plays
Fear Factory. Yeah, I like them a lot. And I like Frontline Assembly and Front 242. All these are like, you know, classic industrial bands, Skinny Puppy, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, yeah, like I said, you only had a certain amount of money to expend on music.
Yeah. And
so you had to buy something you really wanted.
Yeah. My friend Sam has pointed this out. First of all, everything was either radio or MTV. You know, I'm saying prior to internet, you know, right. MySpace and all that really blowing up, like it had to be in your face from some type of source. And as my friend Sam put it, like you would buy the CD single, or the tape single. I remember all of those. And then, you know, if there were two songs that you liked, that's when you were like fully invested. All right, I'm going to buy this album. I'm going to listen to it straight through, see what I think. Yeah, it wasn't free to your disposal. And then the big thing, as I was kind of saying before, is, all right, so I still keep a iPod Nano.
Really?
Which people think is, you know, oh my God, it's crazy old school. But the reason for me is when I'm listening to music, I'd rather not have a million distractions.
Yeah, understandable.
And I think now everything is on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's just something you listen to while a text is coming up, while you're watching videos on Snapchat, chat, and Instagram. And I don't feel like music in general is as meaningful now as it was to generations.
No, it definitely isn't. And I mean, think even before us, where it's like, you know, you would literally go out and like buy a record, and that's all you had to listen to was that one record, you know, that one David Bowie album or whatever.
Even the movie industry, I've heard say the same thing, because I've heard people and, you know, directors in interviews say, you know, people aren't going to the movie theaters as much anymore. There's movie theaters closing down, and they feel like, you know, I didn't direct this great cinematic masterpiece
right.
to be watched on an iPhone.
Right. And as with the music, I mean, how many people nowadays sit down and really listen, like you said, to a full album and like really get into that album and listen to all of it and think about what it's about?
Yeah.
I don't think that happens so much these days.
Even opening up the CD, looking at the artwork, that's non-existent for most now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not even... People, kids today would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, we're sounding like, as Pat said,
crotchety old men,
even though we're in our early 30s. Yeah. But it is true, man. It's like a totally different generation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just feels like music is so much more disposable now. You know, it's like I said, it's just tracks that you have.
Yeah, your, music, your, movies, know. Culture. And I even remember, you know, I mentioned Sirius, working at Sirius when that band, it was one of those fucking, you know, little girl bands that they're into. It was like 5 seconds of Summer. I don't even remember who, but you see the girls who are like fans of this band who are 13 wearing like Metallica and Def Leppard shirts. And you're like, do you even know who these bands are?
Yeah.
It's become like a trendy, just Hot Topic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you see a lot of young kids outside of the studio, like on the way to Penn Station, you'll see kids in like Guns N' Roses, Metallic shirts. It's become a very trendy thing. Like the Kardashians do it, but there's even been pictures of like the you know, Jenners, like Kylie Jenner and Kendall Jenner wearing Slayer shirts. And
they don't like,
do you really
that.
Think the Kardashians are listening
no,
to Slayer?
I don't
there was a picture
that.
Of Kim Kardashian wearing a Morbid Angel shirt. And that was posted on some metal sites. Like there is, I do not in my wildest dreams believe Kim Kardashian listens to Morbid Angel.
I remember when I was a kid listening to Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do remember of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's as heavy as it gets. So cool. Well, we talked metal. We talked guns. Leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. People are looking very forward to your memoir, which is coming pretty soon.
In the fall.
Yeah.
Still got a ways to go.
Cool.
But yeah, go take a shooting class with Pat McNamara. He'll hook you up with what to do.
Nice.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. For all of the great content from our veteran journalists, join us and become a Team Room member today at softrep.com. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Soft Rep Radio. And be sure to also check out the Power of Thought podcast, hosted by Hurricane Group CEO and Navy SEAL sniper instructor, Brandon Webb.